What's going on, Blitz Nation out there? Welcome back to Blindside Blitz. I am Joe DiCaprio, and unfortunately, our boy Jim McPhee cannot make the show. He doesn't have a voice anymore. It's that simple. He just can't talk. And, you know, he's having issues there, but he is helping us run the show. He's our producer, our guest producer for this show. But joining alongside of me, I mean, the man that doesn't need any introduction at this point on the show, he is the man, the myth, the legend that is Big John. Welcome aboard, Big John.
Hey, Joe, how you doing today, brother? I'm glad to be here, although, as always, if you're seeing me, it's probably because Jimmy is under the weather. So not happy to hear that he's got a bit of a gravelly voice, but I'm happy to be joining you tonight.
Yes, yes, sir. And we got a few topics to get along to. I know the owners' meetings have, you know, gone through and done their voting on what rules they want to upgrade or change or implement new ones. So we're going to dive into that a little bit today. We're also going to get into a couple other things as well down the show.
Yep, let's get in there.
Let's get into the rule changes here. So first off, I'm going to say, like, you know, after they've gone through a plethora of either teams kind of putting up their proposals and rule changes or what have you, the NFL owners approved a significant change to the league's kickoff structure while also authorizing an expansion of the replay assist program. Those were the two biggest topics in the conversation for the NFL meetings, one of which, the touchback on kickoffs, will be marked now at the 35-yard line for the 2025 season instead of the 30-yard line, kind of further penalizing to get those touchbacks. So, Big John, when it comes to this situation about now they're just changing the spot of the ball, if you kick it through the back of the end zone, it's no longer at the 30 now. Now they're going to move it to the 35. How might that impact, you know, the defenses, the offenses, now even getting pushed up further in the field?
Yeah, I mean, look, the NFL is not interested in defense. We all understand that, right? If it's an offensive-driven game, they do have a premium on player safety. Mm-hmm. So if the two seem to be contradictory right now, if you had a premium on player safety, you would think, Joe, that they would want to have more touchbacks. That, hey, it's out of the end zone. Right. There's no crashing into each other. Boom. And how do you incentivize that? Keep it at the 30. Mm-hmm. You and I are probably old enough to remember when touchbacks came out to the 20. I'm old enough to remember that, right? Like, that's what a touchback meant. But you know, the kickers weren't as powerful back then, right? You still had the straight-on American kickers, the Mark Mosleys of the world. So it seems to be a little contradictory, right? If you're really focused on player safety, Joe, wouldn't you want more touchbacks?
And that's the funny part of it all, is that they're all about safety, but they've been taking a lot of heat in terms of the fans wanting the kickoff back.
Right.
They want that excitement back on kickoff. And this was kind of their way of saying, oh, well, we're compromising a little bit here. We're going to give you guys a kickoff, but it's not going to be the same kind of kickoff that you're used to. And when you talk about safety, too, this past season, the concussion rate, which is a big deal, on kickoffs, dropped 43% from 2023. Yep. That is damn near half of a drop-off in terms of concussion rates on kickoffs. That is incredible. And, of course, it's going to be a dramatic number like that because the formula that they're using for kickoffs is not the same that we're used to. This is more a, you know, close. It's within 10 yards of one line protecting the ball carrier, another line pursuing the ball carrier, and nobody can move. Nobody can move until that ball carrier catches the ball.
Right.
So there's not going to be a lot of built up, you know, movement towards the ball carrier and to create those big hitting plays. So it makes sense. The numbers dictate what we saw on the football field this past season. You know, so I get it. They're trying to be safe. I understand they're trying to reduce the concussions and everything, but it's just not the same. You know, it's just not the same with kickoffs. And me and Jim have had this kind of you know, conversation back and forth, pro, you know,
yeah,
pro for it, pro against it. Like,
I hear you because, like, hey, man, I'm old school. I let's face it, I'm just old, right? So I remember the days when those were called kamikaze squads. The kickoffs, the special teams were called kamikaze squads. And it was there because you expected to get somebody hurt. And you had the flying wedges and you had the flying V and all this fun stuff. Now, as a fan, that was exciting. But I do understand that there were people crippled for life on kickoffs and coverages. So here's an alternative. I'm surprised no one just simply came up with this. Why not adopt something like what the Canadian Football League does, which is like there's essentially a 10-yard halo on any kick, punt, kickoff, it doesn't matter, right? Like nobody could come anywhere near the kick returner until he's actually caught the ball and started running forward. And that's like a 10-yard halo. Now, what the CFL did, if I remember the rules, unless they've changed the rules since the last time I looked, it also meant no fair catches. So, like, it was a trade-off, right? You didn't get a fair catch, especially, you know, talking about punts specifically, right? But you had that halo. Like, nobody could come within 10 yards of you until you moved the ball. But you had to field it. And I'm wondering if that would work something similar for kickoffs, right, where you could say, all right, like, you have the starting, you know, the standing start, right? I like that because you don't have the momentum.
Right.
You've got that. They're facing each other, what is it, 10 yards apart now, Joe, in this dynamic kickoff?
Yes.
So 10 yards apart, there's not enough momentum being built up to crash into people. So I like that part of it. And now I think I would have left. I'm okay with them keeping the dynamic kickoff, but that touchback should have stayed at the 30. Quite honestly, could have even been pushed back to the 25, and I'd still be happy with it.
I agree. It's one of those things that the NFL continues to be more proactive for the offense than the defense, obviously, with the way the penalties are called, the way penalties are implemented and created now. It seems like the bulk of the penalties are always to hinder the defense and what their capabilities are against the offense. And it bothers me a lot. Being like a defensive-minded guy, I love defense. I used to love the old days of just blasting quarterback right as soon as they get rid of the ball. Like, now the game has changed dramatically, and the kickoffs now are part of that. They're trying to make it safer. I understand what they're trying to do. I just don't agree with it. I mean, to bring back kickoffs to be exciting again, you gotta go back to the way it was. You gotta go back to having the big kickoffs with guys running down to try to cover the kickoff and everything. I am not a proponent of this new formula, this new formation and how to do things with the kickoff. We've had very few kickoffs go for scores. And that's part of the big excitement is that people look forward to. Now you watch college football, they still have the same deal. They still have the traditional kickoff. Guy returns it. It makes it more exciting. Now we're in a spot with the NFL, which they're trying to make it safe, but also they're trying to kind of find a happy medium to appease the fans, but also try to keep it safe.
Yeah.
Another thing that they've decided to table, at least for the moment, when it comes to kickoffs, is there was a proposal added to this where formation could change, where they may allow a like a 5-3-2 formation in terms of receiving the ball, where you have your blockers spread out and whatnot. We'll have to see how that transpires as they talk about it later, a few more months down the road. But that's something that they're looking into as well. So,
Go ahead. Yeah, I was going to say, for kickoffs, the other thing, probably you're going to start seeing the development of kickoff specialists who are going to be very adept at kicking the ball high and dropping it in that landing zone.
Oh, yeah.
Because I think that's the next skill set that has to be developed, right? I mean, you have to drop it in there. If you're a special teams coach, Like if you're Pat McAfee or whatever, or you know, you have to be coaching up these kickers to learn how to kick it up and then drop, like say at the 5 or 10 yard line. It's just a skill that's going to have to be taught. And who knows? That's the way you might make a football team now, is like just being really good at dropping it into the landing zone.
Our boy William has a comment. He said, "Who cares about the boring stuff? Is a tush push band."
Is he watching porn again?
Could be. But as far as the tush push, it is not banned yet. They are actually going to table it. They are not going to make any decision because apparently in the meetings, there is a 50-50 split in terms of the league, whether they're for or against the tush push play.
Right.
There's been many statistics drawn up about it and how successful the Eagles are at executing that play, but I feel like it needs more of a discussion.
Not just the Eagles. The Bills are pretty good at it too. And, you know, I think I was reading somewhere that the Bills actually had a higher success rate than the Eagles on their version. Now, it's not quite the same play, but the Bills actually had a fun. So, Joe, the question I have for you is this. There used to be a rule that I guess people have forgotten about, and they only got rid of it, say, 15, 20 years ago, if my memory serves. Now, let me paint a picture for you, because I talk a lot, and I'm a storyteller. Championship game, NFL championship game, the Ice Bowl, Cowboys, Packers. Last play of the game, we all remember, those of us old enough, remember that classic picture of Bart Starr sneaking over Jerry Kramer to score the touchdown to get the Packers into the first Super Bowl, right? Well, what people don't forget is there was a fullback, number 44, and if you see the picture, while Starr is crawling over Jerry Kramer, he's up in the air like this, with his hands up like this. Mm-hmm. Everybody assumes he was signaling touchdown. He wasn't.
He was pushing him.
No, it was the opposite. He wanted to let the ref know that he wasn't pushing him. Because back then, and up until the late 90s, I think, mm-hmm. offensive players could not push a ball carrier forward. They could not grab him and pull him forward. They couldn't get behind him and push him forward. You know, there was always a mosh pit where, like, you might off the side do it, but it was illegal. Especially at the goal line, if the ref saw you pushing your boy in, it was a penalty. I forget what it was, 5-yard penalty or something like that. Here's a simple solution to the tush push. Just bring back that rule. Just bring back the rule that used to be part of the game.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, what you're doing is you're penalizing a team for staying within the rules and being damn good at executing a play. That's where all this is coming from, right? If people could stop the tush push, you wouldn't be hearing jack about it. Point is, the Eagles are one of the best teams and the Bills at executing that play. So what do you think about that? Why don't we just bring back that old rule? No offensive lineman or other player can aid a ball carrier by pushing them.
Well, it's funny because as much as Nick Sirianni gets a ton of credit for creating this play, it honestly wasn't created by him.
Mm.
I did a little digging and found that former Minnesota Viking Anthony Barr, who happened to be a linebacker, was sitting on the sideline and talking amongst his teammates and basically said, "Hey, how come now that, you know, they don't have that rule anymore, how come we don't just like try to push our quarterback or running back through the thing?" And once I saw it's a video footage, so you can check it out, like if you can find it. But I'm like, no way. Anthony Barr thought of this, and
right.
Now it's being brought up, but I thought it was a cool little nugget on, because everyone, you know, debates on who created the play, who came up with the idea, but I thought that was kind of like a little funny, you know, excerpt to it.
It was a defensive guy that came up with it.
Guy. Go figure, right? But I'll say this. If you brought back that rule, that would appease some people in the league, but it also would irate, obviously, the teams that are good at it, that don't want to get rid of it because it is a football play. And I think that with every offensive play, there's always another way to combat it and to create a defensive play to stop it. You know, offenses create plays to overcome defenses. Defenses got to do the same thing on their side. So why not, if the offense is getting ready, the Eagles are getting ready, they're right there, it's fourth and one, they're going for it, why doesn't the defense mimic the same formation and shove one of their linebackers towards the quarterback? And well, try to, because yeah, basically it's a scrum. Basically, it's more like a rugby, you know, scrum where two teams come together and they're trying to push each other over the line one way or the other. Why doesn't the defense try to do that and mirror that? Because it's all about that play is predicated on pushing the quarterback and sliding him over the top of other bodies. And that's why a lot of times you're successful, because you're not touching the ground, but you're being slid across, and that's why you end up getting that first down. So why don't the defense do the same thing to try to halt that?
Well, I'll push back a little bit on your rugby analogy, right? Because in a rugby scrum, one side or the other isn't the one controlling the flow of the play, right? Like in a rugby scrum, the referee comes over and just says, okay, both your sides ready, and then he rolls the ball in the middle of the scrum. Whereas in football, only the offense knows when the ball is being snapped, right? That's why football, the offense always has the advantage over the defense, right? Because they know where the play is going. They know when the action is going to be initiated. The defense is always reacting. So the tush push in that sense is if you could execute it properly, and again, not everybody can, really, it's an almost unstoppable play, especially, like I said, if you do it the right way. Now, the reason I think if you brought back that old rule, it doesn't prevent you from designing a new tush push, right? Which is like, because that rule said you can't push the ball carrier forward, but there's nothing that says like you can't still push, say, a fullback or a tight end in front of the ball carrier and create a lane for him, right? Or running options off of it. See, that's the other thing. A lot of people are like, well, you can't stop it. All the Eagles have to do is line up for that play and then run an option off of it, whether it's a pitch out or a little jump pass or something,
right? There's other ways to do it. I mean, but all in all, it's meant to be quick anyway. So if you start trying to be extra creative and be like, oh, well, we're going to fake it and then hand it off to our fullback and then push him or have to go a different way. I mean, it would delay the play instead of it being bang, bang.
What about the premise on that play that it's more dangerous? Again, if you go back to player safety. Jason Kelce said that. He goes, every time I ran that play, I felt like a building collapsed on me. You know, it was like, he admitted it's, that play is super, super dangerous, and it's risky.
It's dangerous and risky for everybody involved, the offense and defense, because we've seen injuries happen. Look at the Super Bowl. Chris Jones, he hurt his neck in that play,
right,
where they tried to do the tush push again, and he ended up getting hurt, left the game, never didn't return after that point.
Right, right.
And although it was out of hand a little bit, it still begs the question of how dangerous is this play, because maybe that's the reason Jason Kelce retired. Was just that had to be a major part as being the center for the Eagles. And he said after games, he's like, man, I feel like I got ran over like by five trucks. Like my body's so sore after every game. And that play in particular just really, really, you know, kind of overtaken, you know, Jason Kelce and what he was able to withstand.
Yeah.
His body was so beat up. So, I mean, I think anybody, offense or defense, there is a opportunity to get hurt on this play.
Do you think that's a more winning argument as opposed to, hey, we just can't stop it? Is it more of a winning argument at the owner's meeting?
I don't think at the owner's meeting that is the directive. I don't think they're saying, okay, we're going to spearhead this with, well, we can't stop it. The majority of the teams can't figure out how to stop it, so let's get rid of the play. I think it's more driven by the medical part of it, the safety part of it. Guys are getting hurt. Here's the statistics. Here's, you know, some guys that did not report any major injuries, but a ton of minor injuries happened when they played the Eagles or when they played the Buffalo Bills that were implementing it. So that right there, I think, is the directive. That's what they're really kind of honing in on and trying to make a case for.
And honestly, that push-push, the way the or brotherly shove or whatever you want to call it,
that could
actually be escalated even worse, right? Like, I mean, typically the Eagles run it, say, with two tight ends leading Hurts, right? And then having a back behind him pushing, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I can imagine replacing everybody but Hurts with an offensive lineman. Can you imagine they lined up with three guards in that formation in the backfield? Think about it. Like, you could escalate it even worse in terms of making it more dangerous and more effective. So I do think that there is, like, you know, it's tough for me, man, because to your point, hey, don't penalize someone for doing something well, right? Like, you can't just, you know, that's like the old days, you know, like people forget the illegal chuck was because nobody could get past Mel Blunt off the line of scrimmage back when the steel curtain was around, right? And they said, hey, Mel Blunt was responsible for changing a rule. They just receivers couldn't get off the line of scrimmage, so they had to change the rule. Mm-hmm. Jack Tatum would mug people while the ball was in the air. You know, just as a quarterback would release it, he clothesline somebody. So
it was a different time. Definitely a different time.
But my point is, they caused rule changes, right?
Yes.
And it was all for play. One was for player safety. One was for excitement because they said if everybody does what Mel Blunt does, nobody can throw the ball, and we're going back to the, you know, 3 yards in a cloud of dust. And even then, nobody wanted that in the late 70s. So is it the same thing now? Is it that it becomes so automatic, whether it's the first down for the Eagles, whether it's the touchdown for the Bills with Josh Allen? Is it part of that? Like, we already saw they changed the rule because it was too automatic. The point after, it was too automatic, so they said, we got to change it up, move it back, make it like a what is it, 35-yard, 38-yarder right now?
Yeah.
We got to change it, right? Because it's too automatic. People are falling asleep during this thing. Mm-hmm. Do you think that, Joe, do you think that goes into the discussion where some of these owners are like, hey, even if it's not fair, this play is too automatic, so it's killing the league excitement. You know, when they get in that fourth and inches, nobody's stopping them. Is that part of the consideration in addition to the injury and in addition to the jealousy is what I'm saying?
I don't think they'll win that argument. If like, because it's not – like, we've seen the percentages. Like, the Eagles, the last 3 years utilizing it, they've been anywhere from high 70 percentile to mid 80 percentile in terms of success rate. And it depends on the year, how much success they've had. So is it above 60%? Sure. But there are teams that have found ways to slow it down, to nullify it enough through games to kind of stop it in a sense. But for the majority of them, yeah, they're pretty successful at it. You know, it is a difficult play to stop. But I still don't think just because you're good at a play, we just should get rid of it.
Yeah.
Like, I still think that it comes down to safety. Now, if it comes down to where the teams that are for canceling it, you know, say, hey, you know, look at this many minor injuries transpired. Guys, some of the guys missed the following game. Some of the guys missed extenuating, you know, time due to it, or had to play hurt the rest of the year because of it. Then maybe they have a shot of getting rid of the play. But I think that you can't get rid of the play just because it's so hard to stop.
I agree with you.
You're going to have to try to figure something else out. But
yeah, you know, part of it is as old Art Donovan used to say, the defensive tackle for the Colts. It's like, well, if that quarterback's going to throw his head in the middle of that scrum, make sure you take it off.
Yep.
You know, it's like, you know, you played football, right?
Yeah.
Like, you and I know whatever happens at the bottom of that pile is you know, it's anything goes, man. Fingers and eyes, people biting your fingers, you know, kicking you in the nether regions and all that. It's like, so you need more of that, I think. Not to play dirty, but you got to exact a physical toll if that quarterback, whether it's Jalen Hurts or Josh Allen, says, hey, I'm going to go head first into this line, make them pay. Make them pay every time until the coach says, I'm not risking my quarterback anymore. I don't want to risk him anymore.
This is definitely going to be one of those main topics as they start to talk further about it that is going to constantly linger on. And there's going to be a lot of people that are on both sides, for it, against it, whatever, different reasons, different opinions. But this isn't the only thing that is being talked about at the meetings. The next one that we're going to get to is owners approved to add responsibilities to its replay assist program.
Hmm.
The on-site replay official will now be permitted to reverse flags that are thrown for hits to defensive players, along with face mask penalties, horse collar, tripping, running into and or roughing the kicker. So we've seen this happen before.
Nothing's ever going to get called.
You know, penalties get thrown.
Yeah.
And that, and then now they're allowing the replay assist to kind of say, hey, we're throwing a flag up. We need you to take a look at this a little bit deeper. Is it a penalty or not?
Right.
But it's only for these specific situations. It's not for everything in football. So those replay officials, however, will not be allowed to add a flag when an obvious foul was gone uncalled. That's the other part of it.
No.
So it's only being used one way or not the other. So they can correct flags, like if they thrown it and, you know, they said horse collar, and then they look at it and say, nah, when
it was
horse collar, they can pick it up. But they can't use replay assist to say, hey, we missed the pass interference. You know? So
yeah,
it's like we're only utilizing this thing one way.
It's kind of going to be interesting because here's the thing. I think that any replay official is going to be loath to overturn an on-field referee or an umpire tossing some laundry. It's just they're going to be loath to do it. We saw it like after that infamous whatever season that was where you know the Saints receiver got mugged on the sideline and there was no penalty and this, oh, we got to have replay for this. It cost the Saints a playoff game, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Right. And then the following season they put it in and guess what? How many calls got overturned? Zero. How many flags got thrown that weren't? Zero. Because nobody wants to show up their officials. And let's face it, the officials are NFL property. Nobody wants to show them up, right? Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting to me is, will they actually overturn stuff? Potentially I could see it. I could see it.
That's what we're getting to, though.
Yeah, but we need to.
We're getting to the point where, I mean, it's been self-evident. We've seen over the past amount of years where we're like, how come that wasn't called? Well, wait a second. How did you call that penalty when there was nothing there? Like, how do you call it from across the field? I don't understand. So we've seen situations where penalties are called or not called.
Right.
And we're losing our minds at home as fans. Like,
of course.
I don't understand. This is just the tip of the iceberg, by the way. I feel like as we start to get to using replay assist, getting more efficient with it, we've already witnessed that there's technology in this game that we're going to get to a little bit later in the show that is being implemented for this upcoming season. And I think that with this replay assist, I think this is kind of the starting point where they're going to be like,
let's see
how this goes.
Yeah, but
let's see how it goes, and then
yeah.
we can reconvene next meeting. Like, were we successful? Were we not successful? What can we tweak?
I have two questions on that, Joe. So one is going to be what I just said. Like, will replay officials be willing to correct on-field officials? Because, yeah, the rule is there, but will they be willing to actually step in and do it? And then the second thing is the culture of refereeing itself, meaning because of they know that a flag could be overturned,
mm-hmm.
are they likely to throw more flags? Meaning, like, hey, if we get overzealous in calling things, we've got our asses covered. You know, sort of like right now, if there's a turnover, right, or maybe there's a turnover, the referees are told to swallow their whistles. Why? Because they'd rather let the play go on and then have somebody say, hey, it wasn't a turnover. You know, he juggled it or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, I think, the correct way of doing it in that instance.
Yes.
Will it cause, though, the same type of thing? Like, hey, I don't know if that was holding or not, or, you know, whatever it is, pass interference or roughing the quarterback. I'm going to throw the flag anyway. And if I'm wrong, New York's going to correct me or the booth is going to correct me. Will that slow down the game? Will it cause more flags to be thrown? And then combine it with the fact that the booth is going to be less likely to step in and overturn it. So do you think referees will change the way they call games if they know that this rule is in place?
I don't think you can as a referee. You can't change how you call the game because now you're going to show if the amount of penalties that get thrown for this upcoming year increase dramatically just because of what you said, they got a backup. They're gonna bail us out if we get it wrong. That just shows the fans that, hold on. So you guys weren't going to call that a penalty, but now that you know that you have backup, you're going to throw more penalties. So that tells me like, okay, you guys aren't as in tune, or you're not as, you know, to decide.
Yeah.
Like without a doubt, like, oh, that's a penalty or that's not a penalty. This leaves that cracks the door open a little bit to saying, hey, how many times have these guys called it fairly then? How many times have these guys, now that they got to have some assistance?
Right.
And I think this is a good thing. If you're a referee, even if you're not supposed to throw the penalty anyway, unless you absolutely see it with your own eyes and believe what you see.
Right.
You're not supposed to guess. And that's what I feel like sometimes it does happen. Nobody's perfect. You know, referees are human. They're going to make errors from time to time. But this is a chance to kind of get it right. That doesn't mean throw more penalties because, well, I don't really think that's a penalty, but I'm going to throw the flag anyway. And then if the replay sees otherwise, then I'm good.
Right.
I don't think that should be the mentality going into it.
It shouldn't, but the question is it? Right? I agree with you.
It shouldn't be.
But look, man, we see that when they get told points of emphasis, all of a sudden the calls change, right? Like Juwan Taylor, right? He got away with false starts and illegal formations most every play that first season with the Chiefs until after having to listen to Collinsworth bitch about it incessantly, then all of a sudden it became a point of emphasis. Right. And then all of a sudden around week 4 or 5 or whenever it was, all of a sudden he's getting flagged every other play, false start, illegal formation because he wasn't on the line. Right. And they kind of and if you ask me, Juwan Taylor still hasn't run a clean play for the Chiefs. Right. But so we know that if the league office starts saying, hey, emphasis, take a look at this or don't look at this as much. We know the referees respond to that stimulus, right? So in this particular case, if it's like, hey, if you're not sure if it's a late hit on the quarterback, toss that flag because, hey, if you're wrong, if you were overzealous, the booth is going to bail you out. But at the same time, if you do that, you got to tell the guy in the booth, like, hey, they're not your buddies down there. No feeling sorry for them. You call it. And then the other thing is the pace of the game, right? Because
the pace of the game, to me, it's all about how you execute what you're trying to do.
Yeah.
Like, I've seen in college football, they review a ton of plays. Like, actually review them. And in real time, they get to the point, they look at the video once or twice, they make a decision, they call it, let's move on. College football should be a great indicator for the NFL. Be like, oh, listen, this is how it's supposed to function. This is how it's supposed to work. This is the speed in which we should be making calls.
Right.
Not have 5-minute conference calls in the middle of the football field deciding who saw it the best. What angle did you have? Did you really see that? Did you not see it? Like these small little meetings, and that's what fans get really amped up about, is because why is this taking so long? And then when you have the instant replay to look at, for some reason, we got two commercial breaks that just went by and you're still looking at the footage. Like it shouldn't take that long to figure things out and move on. So my thing is, if the referees can't handle speeding up their process of making a call, and looking at the evidence or not, then you need to find new referees that are going to do that. Because there's guys out there that are definitely more efficient on how they move the game along, on how they decipher calls.
Right.
They're out there waiting for an opportunity like the NFL. You might have to look into that, because we've also seen the age gap that is NFL referees versus college football. You know, now you got the spring league. You got USFL and XFL and everybody kind of coming together. Now you have that. Those are guys that are, yeah, it's a little bit tweaked, but still, guys would love to be a referee in the NFL. So, like, if that's the case and guys aren't being efficient enough and not doing their jobs,
right,
you know, it might be time to kind of turn that over a little bit, that position.
Right. No, I agree with you.
Another proposal that got approved is coming from none other than the Philadelphia Eagles to give each team a guaranteed possession in overtime during the regular season. Previously, a team with the first possession could win the game in overtime if they just scored a touchdown. Right. This rule change aligns the philosophy with a previous change to postseason overtime, except regular season overtime will still remain at 10 minutes. So, John, now we have the Eagles taking a step forward and implementing a proposal. You're getting passed through. They're treating it basically the same as the playoffs now.
Yeah.
Now you have an opportunity. Both teams have an opportunity to possess the ball. You got 10 minutes to do it and try to decipher a winner. Here's my problem, John. I'm a little old school in this whole overtime situation. I like sudden death. I think the first team that scores, whether it be a field goal, a touchdown, whatever, a safety,
right,
that should determine the winner, end of the game. But now they're allowing both teams to possess the ball in overtime.
Well, I like the fact that the regular season and the postseason are the same. So let's get that basic premise out of the way. Whatever happens during the playoffs should happen during the regular season. So whether you agree with the overtime rules or not, the fact that they're the same, they're consistent,
yes,
kudos. I'm down with that.
Right.
I'll even go more old school than you. I think, and I've always said this, is regular season, postseason, I don't care. You play the full quarter of overtime.
No,
I don't care
what,
how many times you score, no matter what.
So, like, it's another quarter.
It's just another quarter. If you're still tied after the fifth quarter, sixth quarter. Because my thinking on something like this is I want to see all facets of the game. I want to see this.
Hold on.
Yeah.
Hold on. This is where I got to stop you there.
Yeah.
Because we just got done talking about how long the game's going to go, and the NFL doesn't want that. So I really don't think that we'll ever get back to that.
Oh, I hear you. I know we're not, but I'm just telling you what I would like to see.
Okay.
I would like to see these guys play football, because let's face it, how many games end in a tie? How many regular season, four-quarter ties do we see?
Not many.
Not too many, right? It's a small percentage. And then, if you allow the full quarter, you don't have to worry about this nonsense. Am I playing for a field goal? I agree with your sudden death thing until they change the rules. So if most drives are starting at the 35 at a minimum, for the most part, and these kickers are blasting them from the opponent's 40, 45-yard line, they have a reasonable shot of making the field goal, sudden death now really comes down, for the most part, comes down to the coin toss, right? So I understand the concept of sudden death not being preferred. I get it. But I would rather see just play the whole quarter. If it's tied after the fifth quarter, go to a sixth quarter, go to a seventh quarter, sort of like college football, not exactly, but sort of. And I think that would bring excitement to the game. It would bring a sense of urgency for these guys, right? But it wouldn't be dangerous, I would think. It'd be tiresome, but it wouldn't be dangerous because you're just playing your game at that point. You could still play. If you're a good defensive team, you could just play to hold them. Play ball control for that overtime. Play for the field goal, but understand that if you didn't make it, it's not a tie. You could still lose the game. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's just me, but I understand it won't get to that. So having said all that nonsense, I would say I'm aligned with them saying, hey, whatever you got in the postseason, that's what we got in the regular season.
Keeping it the same.
Like, consistent, yeah. Consistent, yeah.
That part makes sense to me.
Yeah.
I just, for a league that is always worried about the length of the game, this is kind of the same ideology of saying, oh, well, thanks for participating in the regular season or for the regular amount of time in the game. Guess what, guys? We're going to go into overtime, and guess what? Doesn't matter who scores the touchdown first. It's okay because we're going to give the other team a chance. Like, no, this overtime is to decide the winner right away.
Let's not say,
we got a touchdown. The other team's going to get a chance to match it and keep this overtime thing going. Let's just say, like, let's get a winner already.
Well, I'm with you. I'm with you on the, if they kept it to, well, if you score a touchdown, either defensively or offensively, the game's over in overtime. I'll buy that. I just didn't like the fact that a field goal on the opening kickoff of overtime could decide it. See, I wasn't down with, and it wasn't because I favored the offense or the defense. It's just that the rules itself, it lended itself to playing for a field goal. And with the liberalized offensive rules favoring the offense, playing for a field goal becomes much easier, right? Like, it's sort of like the tush-push. Yeah, somebody might be able to stop it, but if it's got like an 80% success rate, why would you do anything other than that, right? Yeah. So in overtime, if you kept it at pure sudden death, meaning the first score of any type ends the game, that I would have liked not accepted. But if you're keeping it as, okay, but if someone puts it in the end zone, offensively or defensively, even on their first possession, cool. I'm okay with that. I'm okay, to your point, with that. I just don't like to see a field goal. A safety, I could see ending the overtime as sudden death. I'll accept that, too. But just that effing field goal, you start out at your 35 or 40, and then, like, you got to travel 20 yards, 25 yards. That's all you got to travel. And you're playing for those 20. It's not like you get them in the process of trying to score a touchdown. You're playing just to get 25 yards. And to me, in today's NFL, that's, you're putting too much of the onus on the defense to be miraculous at that point. And that's why I would be against that.
I get it, but I just want the game over. You know, if you got a good enough defense, you can get them to stop. You got a couple of chances to get them three and out. And if you can't, and they make the field goal, because there's no guarantee that they make a long field goal.
Right.
And if they miss it, and it's a turnover, and now you got your shot, you did your job. So there's always going to be that, the other team just didn't get a chance. They ended up kicking the field goal. Okay, but at least it didn't last 15 minutes. At least it didn't last any kind of long duration to decide. And that's the other thing, too, is even with overtime, sometimes – they go the full 10 minutes.
Yes, very rarely.
I haven't figured it out.
Very rarely, very rarely it does end up that way. Hey, let me just, since we're tossing ideas out, would you be okay with, sudden death, first score wins, but you start out at your own 20?
Yeah. Yeah.
No kickoff, you just start out at your own 20.
That would be fine.
If you score first. Yeah, see, I would go for that.
That would make sense.
I would be okay with that. Yeah, I'd go for that, too. Yeah, because the defense now can play defense, and, they could play for field position, whatever. It's that that extra 15 yards, like on the touchback now, you're starting out at the 35. If a guy has any sort of return, I don't know.
Right.
I mean, but at least they're consistent. I'll give them credit for being consistent.
At least the NFL is consistent in this.
Right. Yes, right, exactly. Here. Right.
Another one that we had is approved. They approved the request to add additional specifics on prohibited actions that would violate the league's unsportsmanlike rules.
You got to explain this one to me, Joe. You got to explain this.
The throat slash gesture, the simulating firing or brandishing a gun.
Okay. You don't have to do this.
or display the nose swipe. So I don't understand the violent nature of the nose swipe for a celebration, but it's in there. It's been put in. So now,
that's crazy.
Anytime a player does, I get the throat slash gesture. Obviously, that's violent, you know, whatever. The simulating firing or brandishing a gun. Okay. Violence. We're trying to get away from that. We don't want that shown on public TV. But the nose swipe gesture, I don't see it being harmless. But
so,
again,
so I don't get any of it, Joe. I don't get any of it. You know when I thought we lost our minds? When Brandon Cooks got flagged for his bow and arrow gesture in the end zone. Like, how many people are walking around like Robin Hood, you know, doing drive-bys with bow and arrows? It's not – listen, it's much like people who complain about violence in movies. This is the libertarian in me, all right? It's like, do whatever you want on the field. Once you allow celebrations, I don't care if they bring a chorus line onto the field. I don't care if they're doing, like, multiplayer dances. I couldn't care less. I love the Vikings for this. Every time they scored defensive touchdown, I couldn't wait for the new Selly dance to come out. Like, I am a fan of all that stuff. Taunting has to be, honestly, I think it should be a penalty, but I wouldn't do strict rules about it. You know what I mean? I would have the referee in that moment say, hey, you taunted the guy. You put a football in his face. To me, that's much more offensive than... what? We don't have kids in the first grade running around going bang bang to each other. I mean, come on. Like, this is nonsense.
I think so. It's different for me because taunting is definitely part of the NFL. It's part of every layer of football. Like, growing up, you get taunted. You might taunt someone else because you achieved a play over them or scored a touchdown. I get the celebrating part, and the taunting is part of it. But when it gets to a point where it's personal, or you turn it into a personal attack, then I could see the league stepping in and giving you a fine, a hefty fine. They did that before when they were totally against celebrations. Anything, dancing in the end zone, you'd get a penalty, and then a fine later from the NFL. Then they kind of lightened up on it and said, okay, you can celebrate, but within reason. And I feel like this is just kind of like another stamp that the NFL is putting down and saying, listen, it can't be anything sexual. It can't be anything violent. It can't be anything like that because we're trying to keep a clean image and we're trying to just, you know, we're trying to just make our sport bigger with fans and everything. So I get it to a point, but I think taunting is still part of the game. I think they should allow it if it's not deemed violent or personal or anything like that. Listen, I love when Tyreek Hill catches a bomb and puts up two peace signs as he's running down the field. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And just said, peace, I'm out of here, like I scored.
Yeah.
That to me is okay. But when you have all these things about like maybe it's being seen as like a violent act, or if you pointed guns at another player and did it, I get it, because now you're making it a personal thing.
Yeah, I still wouldn't do it. In my opinion, I still wouldn't do it. You know what it is? Look, I think that they should be allowed to have fun. These guys are the best judges of who's taunting who, the players themselves, I mean, right? Mm-hmm. And there's always trash talking going on that we never hear about as fans, right? But if you were to put a mic on that field and they were to let it go uncensored, you would be hearing a lot of stuff, and a lot of stuff that would make even sailors blush, right? So it's like – so that part of it doesn't bother me. I think it's this constant micromanagement of the NFL, what the NFL thinks it wants to project. And honestly, look, I would draw the line in nudity. Like, I don't want somebody whipping his junk out and, you know, twirling it around or anything in the end zone. Fair enough. But anything short of that, I'm okay with. What are we going down to that? Was it McCrinkleberry, the Key and Peele thing where you only get one pump in the end zone when you celebrate? You know, did you ever see that skit?
No, I haven't.
You got to get it on YouTube. It's literally where they made fun of this, and they said that the guy could do a hip thrust, but the NFL would only allow one. If you did two, it was a penalty. If it was three, you got kicked out of the game. And then they would have, like, a referee sitting by a guy's crotch waiting to see if it moved forward or not, you know. And it was like, it's a hilarious ridiculous skit. It's if you get the chance, I'm surprised you haven't seen it. If you get the chance, look it up on YouTube. But the point is that, like, if you're going to outlaw celebrating, which I'd be against, but if you outlaw it, great, outlaw everything. If you're going to say, yeah, well, you know, like,
it's not
doing...
It's not celebrating, I feel like. It's not the celebration part. It's what they deem as a violent or sexual gesture is what they want to stay away from. So, like, I think they're okay with the celebrations for the most part, but certain ones, like the throat slash, like showing a gun and shooting, you know, pretending like you're shooting it, whatever.
Yeah,
they want to stay away from those.
I was going to say, do it anyway. Who's watching the NFL who gets offended with this? Seriously, who, like, are their ratings impacted? Do they have any data on this? Or are they just being, like, old curmudgeons, old white guys somewhere in New York? It's like, if you said to me, hey, everybody started doing this and pointing guns and whatever, and we saw our ratings go down, all right, fair enough, stop, cut the crap. But my guess is, I don't know, Joe, about you, Joe, my guess is that stuff probably increases ratings. It probably gets more people to watch. It creates more content on YouTube, and it creates more content on social media. It creates buzz about the NFL. So that's why I think it's ridiculous. Let them celebrate. Let them do. Now, if you want to call a delay a game because it's going on too much, fair enough. Like, you have 30 seconds. You have the play clock, and that's it, right? So if you wanted to do something like that, fine. If during a celebration you took the football and hurled it into the stands, that's a delay of game. Mm-hmm. Call that a penalty, or unsportsmanlike, call that a penalty. But the actual dance itself, what are we going to do? Like Dancing with the Stars, we're going to have judges? No. I don't get it.
It's not them getting rid of celebrations. It's certain ones that are deemed violent and sexual.
Well, so that's like, what I'm saying. You got to have people judge it. I don't know.
I think they're trying to stay away from any kind of recollection of using a gun. It's okay to do that to maybe even the youth or whatever. I think that's
kind of
their
mindset.
Oh, I hate
that argument. I hate that children emulate the pros. I saw that. Listen, you want to be a good parent? You raise your own children. You tell them what's right and wrong. Don't wait for football or television to tell you how to raise your children, as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, that's
like,
true.
Right? You shouldn't, like, so if you can't, if your kid is waiting to determine whether this from Tyreek Hill is a gang sign or not, you failed as a parent. Maybe you should be spending less time watching football and spending more time with your kid. If Tyreek Hill doing this or Brandon Cooks doing the bow and arrow is going to set your kid on the path of crime, stop that. You know what I mean? It's like, let them have fun. The sexual stuff, I understand. Like, no sexual stuff, like when who was it? Randy Moss mooned the crowd after a touchdown, right? He did the simulated mooning, right? Okay, fair enough. That I get rid of. Or if somebody got down and started humping a football, fair enough. Call that a penalty. I get that because it's just sexual. It's FCC rules on TV. I get it. But like the throat gesture, the pointing of a gun, of your fingers as guns. I mean, like, what is it, a real gun? Yeah, come on, stop. And that's just my opinion. I've always felt that way. Let them do whatever they want. These guys keep score amongst themselves, right? Like when Odell and Josh Norman had that running feud, right? They knew each one had stepped over the line with the trash talking. That's why they constantly got ejected from games, right? Like when Norman was still an all-pro with the Panthers and Odell was with the Giants.
Then they start fighting on the field.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they'd throw fists because they knew that, you know, somebody said one too many things about somebody's mama or whatever.
Yeah.
They settled it themselves. And when it gets to that point, you throw them out. That's unsportsmanlike contact. You throw fists, right? You get into fights. Dancing, whatever, like pointing guns. Ah, come on. Stop it. That's my opinion.
Another one that we've got to get to is approved proposal from the Pittsburgh Steelers to have one video or phone call with no more than five prospective free agents during the negotiation period before the formal opening of free agency. Previously, teams could speak only with the agent of the player during the so-called tampering period for free agency. So this is going to be a big deal for free agency for the upcoming offseason, where they're going to allow teams to up to five free agents that are seen as being an unrestricted free agent. They're going to be able to, teams are going to be able to hit up to at least five and start negotiations on the phone with the player and the agent, not just the agent anymore.
Right.
Now they're going to be able to have conversations with the player to let them know, like, listen, this is how we view you in our defense or offense. We want to make you a focal point, kind of like a negotiating tactic. To kind of maybe get that player and agent to decide, okay, yeah, this is the team for us.
Right.
A little bit sooner than normally allowed. And they're going to be able to schedule a meeting, but they can't go to that, they can't meet up until that tampering window opens. So something that's going to be very interesting to watch for the upcoming offseason on how some of these teams are going to execute utilizing this new proposal.
Yeah. I don't know how I feel about that. I'm a free market guy. Start negotiating with anybody at any time. If they're not practicing with their current team, they should be able to go out, take offers. Listen, so you and I, if we're working for someone and someone says, hey, I think I want you over at my joint. After the whistle today, stop by Dugan's Pub. We'll have a beer. We'll talk about you coming over. What are you going to need to come over? What kind of notice do you want to give your current employer? Right? We do that all the time. Why should NFL players be prevented from doing that? The tampering thing, I think it's just rules that end up, they're there for gotchas, and sometimes they're enforced, sometimes they're not. It's like, depending on the player's contract, if the player's contract says, you can't negotiate during this period or while you're under contract with us, that's a different story. That's tort law. But if it's
that's exactly what it is that you cannot talk to anybody until the new league year, which is the actual official start of free agency. So
then why get around it? See, that's what I'm saying. Like this, to me, I always look for the simplest solution, right? So If you're not allowed to talk to anybody until the start of the calendar year, the new calendar year, fine. No exceptions. No Zoom call. What's the difference between a Zoom? Do you realize, like, most of us now conduct 95% of our business without ever meeting anybody face-to-face anymore? It's over Zoom. It's over the phone, right? It's over your FaceTime, whatever. So, like, why the distinction? Are we saying, like, they somehow can't put together a contract over the phone, over Zoom? That's nonsense. Of course they can't. So, like, these are just, to me, little cheats. Either say no contact or, hey, it's actually a free market. Go ahead and sell your services. Negotiate all you want. Do whatever you need. You know, I think it figures itself out. You don't need to have Big Brother looking at it. That's why I would just let them go.
I think this is a different take because a lot of times, actually all the time, when it gets to that tampering period where agents are talking to the teams, what do you got? What's the number in mind? You know, you start to see every single free agency that happens in that tampering window, enormous contracts get agreed to just based on numbers. It's not based on how we're going to utilize the player. Does the player even, you know, I mean, he doesn't really get much feedback in terms of X's and O's. This way, teams can literally talk to the player and let them know, like, this is how we're going to use you. This is, we want to make you a major part of our offense, defense, whatever.
Yeah.
And I feel like it is a way that the teams can convey to a free agent what they in fact tend to use him as or how they view him with that team to, in a sense, kind of negotiate their way into him making a decision, not just about finances, not just about location, but now more about also the X's and O's of football, which I think is a good thing for the more for the player than just the agent. So
I don't know.
I actually kind of like this.
I like it, but I'm saying just why even the cloak of dagger? Just like go ahead, fly him out to your campus. Why is it restricted at all? Fly the guy out. Fly the guy out. Fly his agent out. Fly his girlfriend out. Fly his mama out. Whatever it takes. Right?
Because you can't do that before the new year.
But that's what I'm saying. I'm saying why the hypocrisy of it?
Because he's not an unrestricted free agent until that new league year hits. That's the reason why they even created the tampering period, is because to give teams that wanted to start negotiating contracts, you know, that for them to do it ahead of time. And then if that player said, oh, I'm 100% in on X team, new league year hits, now we can fly out there and sign the contract.
But I guess my point is, why is there a disjoint between the league year and, like, why isn't the new league year the day after the Super Bowl?
Because they just didn't decide that.
But that's what I'm saying. So why not make things simple? If you want to keep a player's rights past the Super Bowl, pay him for it. Say, your next
that's
year's
just how, I feel like that's just how those contracts are made, though.
No, if they're made with...
aren't made like, okay, as soon as Super Bowl's over, that's the end of the league year.
No, I get that, but that's because the owners obviously work in concert with the commissioner's office and the rules mm-hmm. committee to set this up. Mm-hmm. And I'm saying is, like, why bother with the who's tampering or whatever? Like, you know, just say, like, the day after the Super Bowl, unless a player's contract says you're under contract for all of 2025 now, like, go ahead. Go negotiate. Why are we waiting an extra week?
I feel like if that was to happen, then you have other teams that are already out of the playoffs or out enough soon enough.
Yeah.
They'll have an advantage to get said player versus the team that literally just either lost the Super Bowl, won the Super Bowl.
Right.
It's kind of like that.
Like with the coaches. It's the exact same thing with the coaches, right?
If you were on like when the dust settles. They allow teams like the dust settles. Then, you know, we get into the new league year. We get into, you know, everybody's kind of on the same page and prepared the same way, ready to go.
You know what it is, Joe? And I think I don't want to get too into it because I know we'll never agree to it. I'm one of these guys that's just like nobody is better at figuring things out than the market. So, like, let the market settle itself, right? You've got a player under contract, great. When that contract ends for that year, he's a free agent. Again, if his contract were to come up, like, say, so if somebody was supposed to be a free agent in 2025, day after the Super Bowl, they're a free agent. You want them around your facility now? You pay them, or you negotiate with them like, hey, we've been together for 5 years. Hang out an extra month. We'll get it done, blah, 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 blah. And if the player trusts the owner, then he'll stay. If not, he'll go out and ply his wares. Like, I mean, these guys have a limited window to earn, earn money.
Yeah.
Let them go out, maximize their value. Let them sell themselves.
But they do that anyway. Like, that's why they all either agree to the highest contract, regardless of the situation, or they make a smart decision and they're like, you know what, I could take $5 million less but go to a winning team in free agency.
But that,
like,
would happen without a tampering period, right? Wouldn't the same thing happen without a tampering period?
No, because here's the thing. This is why I think the tampering period got created, is because, one, they wanted to give a chance. Here's the other thing too, is nothing gets done officially until the new league year starts anyway. So the tampering window is just a chance to give all teams a leg up on contract negotiations for any one free agent. And a lot of times what happens with this tampering period is the fact that players, agents, they basically decide on who just pays the said player the most money in the tampering window. That's why I think where this scenario is where teams are going to have a chance to talk to not just the agent and talk numbers, but they're also going to be able to talk to the players and give like a whole open book on the reason why he should choose that team. Kind of like a recruiting thing for college football in a sense. And this is the money we're going to be able to give you, and this is how much guaranteed, and this is how we see utilizing you. You're going to be a focal point. I feel right. like it's going to be a broader amount of information that the player himself can make a decision off of.
All right. So. Let's see what happens. Actually, let's see. We got William, who's been waiting patiently for us to answer his question. Jimmy Haslam admits that the Deshaun Watson trade was a mistake. With 2 years left on Watson's contract, Haslam's comments feel like a public dismissal, hinting Watson's time in Cleveland might be over. How does Watson react to this, Joe?
He doesn't get a chance to react to it. It's whatever's going to happen is going to happen. And for Jimmy Haslam to come out and say, oh, yeah, we effed up. I'm sorry, guys. We traded away our future. We gave him all the money that we had, like big, enormous contract. We screwed up. It's not just a little screw up, though. It's a major screw up. This has literally set your franchise back again, even though it wasn't too far long ago where you made a playoff run.
Right.
So now admitting fault and saying, well, we're going to look to move on from Watson. Well, that's the problem. You can't just move on from him, at least financially yet.
Right.
There has to be, I think there's like 2 more years until they can get out of that deal to where it's not going to hurt them too much. But, dude, the damage has already been done. Cleveland.
And he's not playing this year, right?
Bad decisions continue to be made in Cleveland. And until that changes, unfortunately for that organization and that fan base, the same result is always going to remain. So Deshaun Watson, to your point, still recovering from his injury that he had late in the season. Not going to be ready. I don't think he's going to be ready for OTAs. He might even miss training camp. And by being as rusty as Deshaun Watson was, and now re-injuring himself yet again, I'm not sure this guy will ever, no, he won't ever get back to the way he was with the Houston Texans. We won't see that Pro Bowl side of him at all.
Right.
His career's done in my eyes. He this was his last ditch effort and last chance to prove to the NFL, to prove to Cleveland that they didn't make a mistake. And unfortunately, it's over.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Yeah.
So I just, Cleveland Browns, man, unless they figure something out in this upcoming draft, I tell you, I don't know if they'll ever find their quarterback.
Yep, yeah. I hear
they
you.
They did trade for Kenny Pickett. So at least they got some kind of insurance, right?
We'll see what happens.
The 46th starting quarterback or something's about to happen. Who knows?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
All right. The Ravens are looking to sign Lamar Jackson and Derrick Henry to extensions. What do you hear about that, Joe?
Well, here's the thing, is if you're a smart organization, you get ahead of the curve. You sign your prolific high-end players earlier than later. Derrick Henry, which is an interesting player to talk about because he is 31 years old right now. He's on the last year of his contract for the Ravens. And you can't afford to move on from Henry unless you have an answer in place. And I think that for Derrick Henry and the Ravens, what it's really going to come down to is this upcoming draft. We are coming to a draft that is so deep with and rich with running back talent. Not to say that, okay, if they draft their guy and then they're going to move on from Henry automatically, no. But they need to get that future put in place this year, this draft. If they can do that, they're going to, I think the smartest move for them, being a running back who's defied the odds, who has somehow found the fountain of youth at 31, extremely healthy, durable, had just over 1,900 rushing yards this year, 16 touchdowns. Are you kidding me? For a guy who just hit the 30 mark last year, and he had such a successful season?
Right.
And honestly, you can make the debate that Derrick Henry is the reason the Ravens were so successful this past year.
Oh, sure. I can make that argument.
Because with that addition, look at the difference that transcended. So my opinion about Henry is hold off. Let's hold off till after this year is over. Because one, you can't predict injuries. Two, you can't predict production to continue.
Right.
And three, if they get a running back in this upcoming draft where they could get comfortable with the idea of moving on from Henry after this upcoming season, then they're in great shape. So I don't think they're in any rush, Big John, to sign him to a 2-3 year contract extension right now when the draft is right there on the cusp of things where maybe they could get their future guy and be locked into Henry at the same time. So I think it's going to be a numbers thing, obviously, if they are to come to terms with him earlier. But I think the smart play is to let it marinate a little bit in Baltimore.
I would agree with you. I mean, Lamar Jackson, if you need to extend him, I would. Like, that's the one position you don't mess with.
Quarterback.
and to your point, the Cowboys, I think, are the case study of what happens when you wait too long. And honestly, they get what they deserve. Jerry Jones got what he deserved. Like, the only guy he took care of was Dak Prescott, and he took care of him later than he should have. And now that's an albatross around that team's neck. He's putting off Micah Parsons. It's already cost him an extra $10 million a year now that Garrett signed his $40 million a year contract, right? You know Micah's going to be – he's going to want 41, right? So the rule of thumb is at premium positions – you're better off signing sooner rather than later. And in the NFL, honestly, there's just two premium positions, right? Quarterback and, like, a killer pass rusher, whether it's a defensive end or a linebacker, right? Like, those are the guys you want to sign to extensions earlier rather than later. Maybe put some voidable years in there. Maybe don't guarantee all of the money. But you want to extend those guys sooner rather than later because all of a sudden – 2 years ago when you're saying Deshaun Watson, who broke the mold with all his guaranteed money, right? Like we just mentioned Watson. He's the guy who started this whole nonsense. The Browns were the team that started all this nonsense by giving them the $230 million guaranteed. Mm-hmm. But in a weird way, that looks cheap now. It looks cheap. It looks cheap now. And that was like, what, 2 years ago, 3 years ago when they signed to that, when they made the trade for him? And it looks dirt cheap now. So you know, when Mahomes signed his, 7-8 year contract, that looks cheap now. The smart teams, when they know they've got the player they want at the most important positions, they will extend them early and they will extend them like a little bit past their due date.
Yes.
So that way they control the cards. They control the narrative of saying, okay, now's when we draft your replacement. Now is when we can cut you and let you go or make a trade or get rid of you. As the Patriots used to say, better to trade somebody a year earlier than a year later, a year too early rather than a year too late. So I agree with you. If Jackson says I need more money, pay Lamar. That's a premium position. As much as I love Derrick Henry, you know, I'm an old school big back guy. I love myself some Larry Zonka and Earl Campbell. So I love Henry as a player.
Yeah.
You don't overpay for running backs. You just don't. I think the Eagles are going to regret extending Saquon for as much as they did, as great and as big a fan of Saquon as I am. I think if the Ravens give him guaranteed money for another 2-3 years, that'll be a mistake, especially at this age. But Jackson, you pay him.
That's the thing. Like Lamar Jackson, he plays that premier position at quarterback. The only thing that I could argue is if a franchise like Baltimore, if they were in love with a quarterback that they thought they could turn into a future starter and be the answer, then you might think about possibly moving on for the younger guy, the lesser contract, that type of deal. But if you don't have an answer there yet, then you have to lock them in. You have to do it early because In 2026 and in 2027, his last 2 years, he's making, you know, cap number in 26 is $74.5 million, but his base salary is 51. Right. His base salary in 27 is 51. Those are big numbers where Baltimore would be okay with paying $51 million, but could they get away with maybe giving him an extension, give him a little bit bigger of a signing bonus, maybe more guarantees, and saying, we want to pay you $55 million on average per year, but we're going to give you a big signing bonus. We're going to give you 80% of the contract guaranteed. And to suffice it to say, the guy's only 28 years old, still in his prime.
Right.
He's got many. That's the other thing, too, is with quarterbacks, you're noticing with all the rule changes to protect the quarterback position, to keep them upright, keep them healthy as possible. Quarterbacks nowadays can last until they get close to 40 years old and, you know, have a pretty long term.
Well, certain types of quarterbacks, right? Like a running quarterback, and Lamar to me is on the precipice of saying, I could be a pocket passer. I don't think he's quite there yet. I agree he's a dangerous weapon.
That's what bails him out, too.
Right. So when you get to say, will he last till 40, that's all dependent on if in the next year or two he starts to transition into the I can hit guys anywhere on the field from the pocket. So when you look at these guys who've lasted till the 40-ish, you know, whether you're looking at Drew Brees, Tom Brady, Kirk Cousins to some extent,
Pocket passers.
Yeah, the guys who are running out of the pocket, putting themselves in danger, wearing themselves down. Let's face it. It used to be that the pocket was the most dangerous place for a quarterback 20 years ago. Now it's the safest place for a quarterback, right? Like if a quarterback wants to make sure he doesn't get hurt, you want to keep him in the pocket. So I agree with you. Like, yeah, a good investment in a good pocket passer. All the thing, and for right now, I'll keep Jackson right now.
Yeah, it's also a mental preparation thing for mobile quarterbacks more than a pocket passer is.
Yeah.
If you're a mobile quarterback, look at Kyler Murray, very small in stature.
Right.
He has a lot of critics, and you can debate right or wrong, whatever. But the one thing that I give him a huge amount of credit. Is even though he knows he's small in stature, he knows he doesn't want to get blasted. So even when he does escape the pocket, he's smart enough and proactive enough to slide before a guy gets to him, to run out of bounds before a guy can hit him. So if Lamar Jackson can kind of get on the same wavelength as like similar to what Kyler Murray's doing, he can last longer as a mobile guy. He just can't afford to take these hard hits or try to power through a tackle because you still can sustain injury that way. So I agree to your point. Pocket passers, obviously, they tend to get closer to that 40-year mark. Mobile guys, they have to have a way about them to avoid all hits at all costs and to just not get dragged down by tackler.
And here's a good prototype for you, Jaden Daniels. I mean, I know we only saw him in his rookie year.
Yeah.
And as good as that guy is outside the pocket, he's just as good inside the pocket. And mm-hmm. and he's very accurate. So a guy like that, you could see now that he's young, let's say you put some more muscle on him, you could see him playing the way he does, the way Lamar does, the way Josh Allen does, getting out of the pocket, getting 50, 60, 70 yards rushing a game.
Yeah.
But you could also see him, if he had to, he could stay in the pocket and be just as deadly because he's very super accurate.
Talking about quarterbacks, Lamar Jackson is the first player in league history to produce over 4,000 yards passing and 900 yards rushing in the same season.
Yeah, he's a great weapon to have. But I think that's a little deceiving because if you look at the numbers, if you're a pure stats nerd, which I'll cop to, you look at those numbers and say 4,000 yards in the season he rushed for 900. Man, he must be a good pocket passer as well. But that's not necessarily the case, right?
Like, right.
Like,
right.
There's still that thing that if he's not running, say for the sake of argument, he tweaked his knee. He can still play, mm-hmm. but he just can't take off the way he used to.
Right.
Can he beat you from the pocket? Can he sit there on 3rd and 12 and consistently find the open receiver and deliver the ball? And I think the answer, if you're watching the games, is he could do it, but not consistently and not to the level of other people that you would label a pocket passer. So I think that's the difference, right? Like, yeah, he's got the yardage. Mm-hmm. And again, this is not to crap on the guy. He's an awesome weapon. That we're not saying anything. I don't think we're saying anything to the contrary. But for his own career, for his own longevity, mm-hmm. and if you want to earn even more dollars that'll go beyond 2-3 years, you got to start transitioning at some point. And that means the Ravens have to transition. They have to go from a run-first offense where he's part of the running game, meaning Lamar Jackson, to being a different type of offense. And let's see if they're willing to do that.
Right, right. Another thing that I wanted to bring up, too, is the fact that, like, for this upcoming season as well, it's been announced that the NFL is going to use Sony's Hawkeye technology to measure first downs.
Yeah, I didn't hear about this. Tell me about this.
And it's interesting because we've seen how technology has been implemented in the game, and we've seen the markers that they put on the field. That's all done by computer, like the 10 yards, and you get the first down marker and all that. Now they're enhancing the amount of technology they use in the game by spotting the football. And this Hawkeye technology is going to have sensors in the football, which it already did. They just haven't used it to its full capacity.
Right.
And now they're going to basically use it to spot the football by using this new technology. And also, it's going to dictate first downs or not. So instead of the referees taking a guess, or one referee on one side says it's a yard short, the other referee on the other side says it's a yard past, now this new technology can be like, you both are wrong. It's right here, smack dab in the middle, and the nose of the ball just got a first down. So it's taking or at least that's what they're aiming for, is taking the guessing part out of spotting the football and acknowledging if it's a first down or not. We've seen too many times, Big John, big, massive pileups at the first down marker. They're trying to run the ball to get that thing. Now we're going to utilize this technology that's going to say, oh, yeah, that definitely touched the line to gain. Oh, yeah, that was past it. You know, or it's going to go the other way. Oh, yep, you're just short, didn't make it. So now it's going to take that guessing work out of it, hopefully, anyway. We'll see how well it works. The idea, in my eyes, is amazing if it can work to the ability that they're hoping it does, and takes a little bit of relief off the referees in terms of spotting the football all the time, so whether they're right or wrong. Now you're going to utilize this newfound technology. However, the backup, everyone's wondering about, oh, what about the chain gang? You know, are they just going to be obsolete? Nope. They are still going to be on the sidelines, and they will be the backups if the technology fails or isn't as accurate as they were hoping. So,
yeah, I love
that's
it.
That's that.
I love it because, listen, when I played ball, it was like one of those things, like, how do I know this chain gang isn't moving 2 feet back every time
we get a first down?
You never know, because as a player, you've got your eyes on the first down marker. Right. And yes, it's always 10 yards from from the original line to gain. But, like, after the first down, what's to prevent the guy from taking 2 steps back? And I don't even mean on purpose. I mean, like, just human nature, right foot, left foot. You could take a 100-yard football field and change it into 101 yards, 102 yards, just by constantly going back 6 inches, 7 inches. So there's that. Then there's also the, like you said, take the brotherly shove. We were talking about that, the tush push. Once that sea of humanity envelops Jalen Hurts, how do we know where the ball is at any given point? Replay doesn't help, right? Because you can't see the ball clearly. So it's literally up to the referee to say, well, I kind of saw bodies move this way, and I'm guessing I'll split the difference.
Yep.
And I think it was in the Super Bowl where we literally saw, for the Chiefs, and of course it worked in the favor of the Chiefs, where the referee closest to the spot because it was on the hash, mm-hmm. ruled it short, and then the line judge from the other sideline ran all the way in and moved it forward a yard for the first down. And that's with replay, by the way.
Yeah. And that's that's not the only time it happened in the playoffs.
Of course. That's just
Bills Chiefs. Yeah. Bills Chiefs. Everybody was wondering if Josh Allen had the first down or not in that scrum.
Yeah.
Again, it's not an exact science. I know they're trying to do their best. However, with this new technology, that takes all that pressure off.
You would hope. Yeah.
I hope it works out. I really genuinely do, because it is physically impossible to look through people and see the ball. Like, it's right. just, it is what it is. So
right.
with this new technology, I hope that it makes the game better. It can progress and maybe even, it might even speed up the game instead of guessing of where to spot it and have conversations. I saw it short. I saw it long. We can kind of just skip all that and get right to
it. I would even love it on something like punting out of bounds. You know, how the referee has to kind of guess where it went out of bounds, right?
Yep.
It's like, have it.
Yep.
See, I love it. I'm for it. I'm 100% yes. for that. Yeah.
And Big John, I feel like this is just the beginning stages of it. Like they're going to try it with this first. And just like to your point, maybe next year they do it for punts.
Yeah. You know?
So we'll see.
I love it. Football is always the most technologically advanced sport in the U.S. Always has been. Like, if anything's going to evolve into rollerball, it's going to be football. You know, and I hope I'm alive for it, Joe. I hope I'm alive for it.
Yeah, I know. Like, we were one of the first shows to talk about the motorized tackling dummies that colleges are now implementing in their practices, where the freaking tackling dummies just like on wheels and it gets controlled like a remote, like a race car,
and it's
going across the field. You got to tackle it. So it's like the technology has been there. Some people aren't aware of it yet. But the NFL is now taking another step forward in that technological space, and we'll see where it takes us. Because if this works, it's going to be pretty awesome. Okay. But that brings us to Tyreek's tantrums, everybody. If you haven't heard already, Tyreek Hill is once again at it again, where he's alluding to with cryptic tweets and fans saying, "Well, are we going to trade for Tyreek Hill? Is this going to be a real thing?" And Tyreek Hill is kind of like, he's not pushing against it. He's actually kind of adding more gasoline to the flames and saying, "Oh, yeah, you know, I'd be down with it. Let's make it happen." But the thing that people aren't looking at is, one, are the Dolphins even considering moving on from Tyreek Hill because of his enormous contract, what he's owed? And when we look at his contract, I mean, honestly, it makes no sense at all to release him pre-June or post-June. They would save no money. They'd have a huge amount of dead cap against them. And then even if you look at the trade scenario, which everybody's wondering, like, can he get traded? Pre-June 1st, he cannot get traded. It doesn't make any financial sense for the Dolphins. They would take on a just over $28 million dead cap hit this year. And they have no savings. They would lose $600,000 of it. That's not a huge number, but a loss is a loss.
Right.
The only way the Dolphins could, if they really are interested in getting rid of Tyreek Hill and moving on, is if they trade him after June 1st. That is the one spot, the sweet spot, if you will, is where they can get out from underneath the contract, having only where they can split that dead cap hit between 25 and 26, where in 25, they only take on $12.7 million in dead cap. In 26, they only take on $15.5 million in dead cap. And get this, in 2025, they don't take a loss. They get just under $15 million in cap savings. So if the Miami Dolphins are considering this, if they want to move on from Tyreek Hill, it's going to happen after June 1st.
Right. And assuming they find a trade partner, because someone's going to have to take on part of his salary too, right? Which exactly. they may not be willing to do.
Exactly.
Hey, I'll turn it around. Why are we talking about Tyreek Hill? I would look at getting rid of Tua. I've said it from the beginning. I don't like that guy. I think his career, the Dolphins should not be enabling him. He's a walking injury. He's a walking concussion. He might be the first guy to die on the field, as far as I know, because he's not equipped to play quarterback in the NFL. And I say that not because his skills are lacking. He's just not on the field long enough. And when you look at the Dolphins, because they can't invest in a quality backup, like every year we know Tua is going to get hurt. He's going to miss time every year. Might as well pencil that in. And who are we trotting out there? Skylar Thompson? Was that the guy's name? Who's the guy? Huntley? Is that the guy we're going to trot out there? Meaning guys who can't get the ball to these blazing fast receivers, whether it's Tyreek Hill or Jalen Waddle? So my question is, why are you looking to get rid of Tyreek Hill? I'd be looking to get rid of Tua. And if I can't get rid of Tua, I'd at least be bringing in like a Joe Flacco or somebody who can actually get the ball out of his hands more than 5 yards downfield to these receivers. So, look, Tyreek Hill is still a weapon in this league. To your point, Joe, financially it makes it nearly impossible to trade him because if you traded him, you would have to have a part. First of all, you get nothing in return, right? Because the only way you would trade that is if somebody took on part of his financial commitment. And if another team is going to do that, they're not giving you a first, second, or third rounder. They're giving you like a fifth round pick to take them off your hands type of thing. So it's not going to be this. Right. The only reason you, if you're the Dolphins, you consider doing it is if Tyreek Hill has become a locker room cancer. That would be the only reason that I could think of. And at that point, a six-round pick and a toaster will do, right? Because you're just trying to get him off your team. Mm-hmm. But if you're doing it for strategic purposes, I don't think it makes that much sense. And like I said, if I'm the Dolphins, I'd be worried less about Tyreek and more about Tua. Like, I don't care how healthy he appears in the offseason. And, you know, you got to look out for that.
Tyreek, with Tua, you got to have an answer before you move on from a starting quarterback. And they don't have it. And in this offseason, they signed Zach Wilson.
Right.
You know, a guy that's young in his prime still. Can he be a starter? Nobody really knows. He hasn't amounted to just yet. But the Dolphins bring him in. They're going to try to work with him. And maybe with the creativeness that they utilize in their offense, maybe they can kind of untap some potential out of Zach Wilson, maybe. But unless you have an answer at that quarterback position, we've seen it before. Teams might move on too early from a quarterback, and now they're in quarterback purgatory and can't figure it out for the next 10 years or longer. So this is the kind of thing where, like, for Tyreek Hill, and we've heard numerous times, and granted, We're just hearing things coming out of locker rooms. We're hearing from journalists that are reporting on the team. Don't
all
know if
speculation.
It's factual or just made up. Right. But at the same time, like, we've heard Tyreek Hill kind of being a little bit of a toxic person in the locker room. We've heard that before. We've seen his off-season escapades, you know.
True.
And it's like, maybe it's getting to that time where you could move on from him. And, you know, yes, you're not going to get a lot in compensation in return, but maybe you get a beginning day three pick. Maybe you could get a fourth rounder, a fifth rounder, something of that nature. Because of his contract being so high, you know you're not getting, a day two pick, first round or anything like that. Like you mentioned, John, that it just doesn't make sense. So unless the organization is saying, we've had enough, we want to move on from him, it's going to happen after June 1st. It's the only time it makes sense. That's what would happen. Dolphins are fully planning to move forward with Tyreek Hill. We've heard that too. Like, they are confident in him. So, I mean, I think this is kind of just a rumor that spun from a fan base type of thing. Other fan bases getting together and saying, what would it be like if we traded for Tyreek Hill? Let's get this thing going.
And let's face it, a lot of it comes because Tyreek shoots his mouth off, you know, so it's only natural to speculate. But, right. like, again, a lot of his frustration last year came from when Tua's not around, mm-hmm. that he becomes a non-factor in these games. And, like, true. Listen, I'm in the fantasy league, homeboy league. It's a keeper league. Been going on since college. So, for me, that's almost like 30 years, right?
Yeah.
I paid an arm and a leg to get Tyreek on my team a couple of years ago. Last season, I traded him. After the second game that Tua got hurt, I was like, I got to get rid of this guy. Anything I could get from this, anybody that I could sucker into taking him off my hands, because he will not produce because the Dolphins refuse to invest in a backup quarterback. Now, Zach Wilson's there now. Maybe they're learning a little bit. Maybe he could be Baker Mayfield 2.0, Sam Darnold 2.0. Right. Maybe. I don't know. But at least he's got an arm on him. Like, no one – like, we've doubted his football smarts. We've doubted Zach Wilson's, I don't know, chasing after his mom's friends or whatever. But the one thing no one has ever doubted is his arm talent, right? He's got a good, strong arm on him. I've said it many times, Joe. Watch any of those Dolphins. All of them have to slow down for Tua's deep passes. He's never outthrown any one of those receivers. They all have to slow down to track the ball in the air when it's coming out of Tua's hands. Maybe they can't wait to find a quarterback like Zach Wilson that could, you know, when he could toss it 60 yards in the air. Maybe they need that. I don't know. But if they can figure out, at the very least, get a competent backup that can take advantage of the offensive weapons they have. Because it's not just Tyreek. It's Jaylen Waddle. It's Achan, right? Wilson, yeah. All these guys, right? Mm-hmm. That offense is just speed everywhere you look. If you need a quarterback, all right, take a 50% passer. I couldn't even care less. But find me someone that you could run the full complement of plays with. And you couldn't do that last season. We saw it. Both those backups were, I mean, not as human beings, but as players, they were worthless. Like, they could not execute in that offense. So, yeah, I think the Dolphins have a lot more to worry about than whether or not they need to get rid of Tyreek. They don't need to get rid of Tyreek. Figure out your quarterback, because as much as you think you've got it figured out with Tua, I'm here to tell you, you don't.
Yeah, and I wouldn't be surprised by signing Zach Wilson as a backup, a guy who's young. They can work with him. They can maybe create some plays where he can be real successful with,
right.
If, in fact, Tua yet again gets hurt. But also don't be surprised if they go into this draft with the idea of thinking of drafting a quarterback that they can also groom besides Zach Wilson. And maybe that's going to be the exit strategy from Tua.
Like a day two pick, maybe?
It will most likely be a day two pick, maybe round three. If they really like a developmental quarterback that they think they could work with, I wouldn't be surprised if they pull the trigger. I wouldn't even be surprised if they pull the trigger in round two either, honestly. But round one, I think they really still need to continue to build on the offensive line. And you're going to see it. But that all being said, we will soon see if the Dolphins are fed up with Tyreek or not, whether they trade him or not. I don't see it happening. If the word around Miami starts getting louder when we get to May and June, then maybe you might see something happen. But all in all, I think this is kind of like a overblown talking point. So
with that, it's off season talk radio. Off season talk radio,
that's
stuff. That's what it
that's
is.
That's it. All the fun stuff to talk about. But we have no clue if it's true or not.
I agree with you.
Yeah. But that brings us to the end of our show, Big John.
Oh. Went by so fast.
So fast, so quick. And Jim, kudos to Jim, who's running all the controls in producing for us. Thank you, Jim, for doing that. You know, if you're new to the show, or, you know, if you just want to be part of the crew, it's real simple to do. Head over to YouTube for us at Grumblings Media. Make sure you hit that subscribe button for us. Hit the thumbs up while you're there. Share it to all your family and friends, because this is the best interactive NFL talk show you're going to find. It's that simple. And then sometimes we have our boy Big John filling
in. Just rarely. Just when
drop
you feel
the
like,
knowledge on you guys.
Just when you feel like slumming, I come in. But listen, to Joe's point, smash that subscribe button. Join the growing Grumblings Media fan base. We've got 8,000 subscribers now, growing like hotcakes. So, you know, hop on board now before it's passé to say I was there back in the day when nobody knew about Grumblings Media, when nobody knew about Blindside Blitz, because everybody knows about us now. Everybody knows about the Blindside Blitz. And, Joe, thank you for having me on. Thanks to Jim in the background there. Appreciate you having me on and running the controls for me. I don't know, Joe. What do you say? You want to hit the closing screen?
Definitely. Let's get it done.